We're back on the show, Entertainment Like You Never Heard Before. I'm Matthew Toffolo with Wes Berger and Jen Frankel. We're listening to us on thatradio.com or wildsound.ca. If you are listening to us on wildsound.ca, check out the April 27th Matinee Film Festival for Wild Sound, Sunday, April 25th at 2 p.m. This is the director of Working Class Rock Star, Justin McConnell. How's it going, Justin?
Hey, not bad at all. I just got to ask, though. Brian Adams?
What's with Brian Adams?
I actually wanted to play some Julian Cope. Do you like Julian Cope?
That seems like a little better. That seems like a provocation.
No, but it was a little bit more obscure. I was just looking for something that sort of had like a rock star thing going for it.
No, it works. It fits.
You got a problem with Brian?
Oh, Adams. I've got no problem with Brian Adams.
But
no.
You're just questioning.
I'm just questioning
choice.
The musical choice, but more or less. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about.
Okay, when you get your own radio show.
They always say lead with a joke. So
gotcha.
You know,
lead with a joke and then end with a joke too.
Well, I'll attempt to.
Just remember that.
Yeah, just you know.
I'll put you on.
Give me a 5-second warning.
If not, Wes will
just
laugh
knock.
And people will assume it's a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get Wes to set you up for with a straight line.
That sounds good.
He's good at that.
Okay, so Justin McConnell, director of Working Class Rockstar, is a documentary feature film about working class rock stars.
Yeah.
I'm playing at the Matinee Film Festival April 25th, 2 p.m.
27th.
April 27th.
Yeah.
2 p.m. The festival runs from April 25th to April 27th. And it's sort of like your first screening. It will be like we'll do a Q&A afterwards. So before your big screening coming up in a couple months, it'll be like a nice little test screening for yourself.
Yeah. So basically, we're just asking anybody who is interested in the project to come on out. It's been being made for, I think, about 3 years now, 3.5
wow.
years. It's been a long process to shoot it.
So tell us about the documentary.
Well, okay. What happened was towards the beginning of 2004, I was working for a company making TV spots for Universal and Warner, and simultaneously I was doing a bunch of like small music videos for indie bands. And while doing this and DVDs, I met this band called Dog Fashion Disco, who have like a Grateful Dead style following that follow them from city to city. And, you know, they've been around for 12 years and they've got like 5-6 albums out, and weren't making any money at all. And really, really should have been. And then I realized that all these bands that I'm going to see in these clubs aren't really making any money. At a certain level, and even a little higher up, they're not getting what you'd expect they'd get, because it's the same thing as the film industry. There's a lot of middlemen. Before they get any money, a lot of people have to get paid in the middle.
Sure.
So I started doing some research and collecting interviews on my own, self-financing out of my own pocket the whole time for a couple of years. I finished the first cut of the film and did a test screening at the end of 2006.
Okay.
At that point, I brought on a media seller who will remain nameless, and I lost about a year and a large chunk of money to somebody who told me I got sales that I didn't get. So
ouch.
Now we're in 2008, and we're starting all over again with the sales, with me actually knowing that I'm talking to these people at these companies, and they're getting screeners.
So the film industry is just as shady as the music industry then?
Yeah, but the funny thing is I'm making this film about, you know, watch your ass,
and
I wasn't watching my ass.
That's sort of what,
it's kind
sort of what
of
I was
the
hinting
funny part,
at, right?
Yeah.
The irony of that.
But
so.
it kind of works for the film itself, because the way I approached making this was like, as a band who doesn't really know anything or doesn't really know a lot, you know, they've got to feel their way through. You know, a lot of them, they just self-finance. They try and spread the word through a scene. You know, they get like a small grassroots following, and then it builds up. And I tried to do the same thing with the film.
Okay, so because I just doing some research about this film, because this is like a hard film for me. I'm being the distributor now.
Yeah.
Your film for the festival. Mm-hmm. It's a hard film for me to sell, but I'm going to sell it. But it's because it's about the music industry. It's a music documentary, and I'm really in a different world, right?
Right.
Where it's the audience is going to come here is a different kind of audience, or music aficionados. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's so many music fans out there.
Oh right? Yeah, and there's so much different type of music. I think the thing you have to remember is that this film, even though I've chosen the heavy metal, hard rock, avant-garde, weird music scene that, you know, has a very big niche following, but not everybody gets and not everybody understands. This movie could be about anything. It could be about hip-hop scenes. It could be about country music.
It's the analogy of the music industry.
Yeah, it could be about anything artistic in which a group of people are trying to reach toward a goal, and, you know, you need to expose like yourself.
So what is the music? What do you think of MySpace for music people?
I think it's a great tool for bands. I mean, I've noticed over the past 4 or 5 years, you know, bands don't even have websites anymore. They just have
MySpace.
Even a bigger, larger band, they design the MySpace to look amazing, and then that's it.
They just gather friends and gather a following, right? Mm-hmm. Do bulletin posts.
Facebook is the same way now. You can get a lot done as a band on Facebook. Any of those, like MP3.com launched so many bands' careers.
But MySpace and MP3, they're the more for the so there is a market there for the independents.
There's definitely a market for the independents, but this film isn't just about the independents.
Sure.
There's a lot of basically the way the label structure works is that there's the major labels who are what everybody's exposed to because of the marketing dollars that goes into everything, and then there's all the independent labels, and a lot of the independent labels are imprints of the majors, or they're still large enough to have people, you know, like Zach Wilde or doing all of Alice Cooper's back catalog or something like that, but because they have independent money, they don't have the marketing dollars that you might expect. And all these bands on these independent labels, they're making money, but not what you might expect. That rock star image is dead.
Sure.
Yeah, that, you know, limousine, hookers, and coke image is all
well,
out the window.
Well, because the industry has changed.
Oh, it's completely changed.
There are strong analogies, talking about you getting screwed and whatever like that. There's so many analogies of the music industry and the film industry, because technology really changed the industry itself, right?
The right now, I think really what is happening is that all the old boys clubs and all the old guard right now either needs to adapt to whatever is coming with the digital revolution and absolutely, you know, everybody spreading things on the internet. They need to use that as a tool instead of their enemy a lot more, because that's where the whole...
That's where it's going.
Yeah, it's where it's going. The problem is that the revenue stream isn't solid yet. Yeah. Like,
because everybody, it's still up in the air.
What do you make of the recent Radiohead release?
Nine Inch Nails, or before that, Prince, who sold directly through their website. It's a great idea. They made a ton of money on it. They made more money on that than they would have on selling their album any other way, only because they cut out a lot of middlemen. But I'm not saying that the major label structure is bad in any way. That's something I have to, like...
Totally, yeah, I understand.
...get around. Like, if the marketing dollars are there to put your band through, who cares if you take a huge advance and, you know, it takes you a long time to pay it back, you know... It's kind of like give and take. It's the same thing as with absolutely any industry at all. You know, if you want to get to a certain point, you're going to have to give up a certain number of things.
Well, yeah, that's what business is about, right? Like
compromise.
Yeah, you can't do everything. Like, you have a band. It's like the analogy. You have a lead singer and a bass player. They can't do both, right? You need a bass player and a lead singer. You need a business person.
Noticed with the larger the projects are that I start to work on, the less control I have and the more people that are involved, right? Like, it's just kind of the way it goes with the band. You know, you've got more people telling you what you need to do in order to sell, and they're right in some ways and wrong in others, but everybody's got an opinion.
The music industry is a really interesting industry, because it's like, there's, especially if you look at the band analogy we're just talking about, that there's so many creative people in the same kettle, kind of a thing, right?
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of brands break up, because ego or creative differences, they call it creative differences.
Oh, I had a band for 2 years that we played in Toronto called Heavily Medicated, and just trying to get us all in the same room once or twice a week was a nightmare. You know, it's like you're not thinking five phone calls to five guys. You're making 20 phone calls and then checking schedules between, you know, it's really tough, and it takes a lot of drive to be able to pull
it. Do you think it's actually a harder deal in Canada than it would be in the States?
Like, to get signed or get money or anything?
Are there bigger challenges different challenges for a musician in Canada as opposed to the States?
I think it's the same all over, really. You can get signed out of the States as a Canadian band. I've had, you know, client bands doing music videos where they got signed out of labels based out of L.A. They make the same money. They do the same tours. It's just, you know, it depends on who you choose to sign with. The same thing as making a film in Canada. Do you make a film for U.S. distribution and go totally past Telefilm and all that sort of thing? Or do you... you know, apply for all the grants and go through all the channels that'll get you good publicity in Canada, but don't mean shit for you in the States until you start doing film festivals and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. It's so funny, because we were talking, one of our columnists about 8 weeks ago wrote a column about the music industry and about how music documentaries and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I said to him on the air, I said, I want to see a documentary about the music industry, because I think it fascinates me now because everything has changed so much through technology.
Is there such a film?
Well, and 3 days later, your film came out.
It exists. I think really what my film is like a door opening. It's not the whole story. I'm not able to tell the whole story. I didn't have the budget to tell the whole story.
No.
I approached record labels about this. I actually got on camera interviews with A&R people who had their labels afterwards tell them, don't sign off on this film. Like, that doesn't mean that the labels wanted to bury the film. It's just they don't want to be shown the wrong way, obviously.
It's opening a can of worms.
Yeah, especially them giving me cut. Sure. Like, it's just, you know.
I totally get that. I totally
documentary
get that.
Is a really, really dangerous tool if you use it the wrong way.
Of course. And Michael Moore, he screwed a lot of people.
Sure. The argument I have about Michael Moore is this. the side he's trying to fight against usually uses the exact same tactics he is. So really, does he try and preserve full integrity? And
that's like saying two wrongs make a
no,
right.
No, well, yeah. Don't they in some ways? Like, I'm not saying...
Well, it depends where you lean.
Well, this is interesting. We're having ends justify the means.
Yeah, I mean, right. I'm not saying that you want to create lies or you want to spread lies. I mean, if there's a truth to something, that's one thing. But the last thing you really want to do is just, you know, lay down and make really, like, armchair points when the other side is trying to drive them home with a sledgehammer.
Well, let's say this. Here's my point about it. Someone's argument is about say, starting a war that's going to kill a lot of innocent people.
Yeah.
And your intention is to stop that from happening. And they're telling lies to make that happen, and you're embellishing things to stop that from happening.
I mean,
like, are those things analogous exactly?
The problem is that it's a vicious circle, right? Like, I mean, if your information
is a vicious circle,
it does, right? but
it's like Animal Farm, like all over again.
But like, if you watch Fox News, I mean, they're using like Lenny Riefenstahl tactics nowadays. Like, I'm not, I mean, I can say that because it's
not,
you know,
only that, but they're treating Stephen Colbert like a serious journalist.
Well, yeah. But, well, who's to say he isn't? I mean, just because he uses humor and if people see him and take him seriously, okay, fine.
That's frightening to think that they actually do that. Does that happen?
I'll give you, like, I know we're, like, what I'm saying is that it seems too easy to do. If someone kicks you in the balls and you kick them back in the balls, it seems a little too...
I'm hoping that's not what I've done
like
with this film.
Clever.
I'm not...
You know,
yeah,
I know
yeah.
you've done that, but I like to think I'm more clever than that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You basically, you do something else besides kicking them in the balls because that's easy to do, right?
I just mean in the form of a documentary, you're proving your point in a very, very manipulative way. It's like that juxtaposition thing. You know, you see three faces, and depending on the music you're listening to while looking at each photo, it means a different thing to you. If you add, you know, the wrong music, like in Sicko, the scene where they're talking about the people that died or whatever, the music he put underneath that made it way melodramatic.
Sure.
Like,
it just tugs
at your heart. That's the problem I have with Michael Moore.
Okay.
But if you watch, you know, any like disproving Michael Moore documentary, they just go way over the top.
Well, they're not good filmmakers.
No, they're pretty bad.
The thing with Michael Moore, he's a great filmmaker.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not saying that.
But he's making entertainment with truth in it, not all the time.
What's the definition of a documentary then?
I don't think you can clearly define a documentary anymore because, you go with a writer like Zach Penn who makes, you know, Incident at Loch Ness and these, like, play with reality type documentaries where they've got Werner Herzog potentially, you know, being Werner Herzog, but not, and all these mock documentaries that are passing themselves off as real. I think your documentary is only as good as your fact checking. And somebody will always find holes in what you're presenting. So
it's like writing an essay.
Yeah, you'll always be disproved. It's an argument. It's nothing more than an argument and points to get across.
You know what my favorite documentaries are about? It's like an essay. It's like you're writing an essay at university. Mm-hmm. It's like you have 2 points.
Yeah.
And you're basically trying to conclude what the two opposite points are, and then at the end you conclude. But Michael Moore does. He just goes on one point.
Yeah.
And drives
it home. And then there's the other type of documentaries like Murderball, where you're telling the story of a group of people, or you're telling, you know, and it's more like an actual traditional narrative. And perhaps the way that those films are edited, you're also juxtaposing things together where you have these scenes that may not have really been like they were edited at all. You put things together, you cut out lines, you know, you have that total control as an editor.
Right, or the order of things has changed to create a more linear narrative.
Exactly, like, exactly. That happens all the time.
That's what 101 is, right?
Yeah.
It's like back in the Eisenstein days, right? Like, that's how what filmmaking is now.
Yeah.
Well, we've actually got a question from a listener. Joe wonders if you're worried that there's going to be any fallout or any negative consequences from production companies after this.
Like, do you mean will I get sued? Are you asking?
I suppose if you think that that it's going to affect you, your career adversely, if this is going to be a problem.
I think we're in 2008 now, and I mean, it's not like I'm speaking out against these record labels. Really what I'm trying to do is tell the story of a group of people and how it is from their eyes. Okay? Anything that's negative in this film that's said about a record label is an individual representation of their own career. That said, in general, as the way it's presented, I almost think I'm complimenting them. I mean, because it is a fight for survival for these labels, for, you know, all the way up, and it's just about the paradigm shift that they absolutely have to make in order to survive. That's really all it is. I mean, labels could watch this film and learn from it, even though, you know, just to see what it's like on the ground floor. You know,
so really, what we should be doing is inviting people to go see the Darwin exhibition at the ROM, and
Something like that.
It looks like it sounds like a fascinating film. It's like I started the show on top about your film because mm-hmm. you, it's like I sort of said you sort of get what you asked for in life, and I got what I asked for because you this film came 3 days after in the mail after me asking for it.
Yeah.
So
I mean
I am Kaiser Soze, by the way.
Yeah. I definitely didn't go out to attack labels. That's not the plan at all. That's
and
not
that's
the point.
A,
yeah.
You can tell that you're not. You don't. You have a passion and love for music industry, and you're telling your side of the story. You don't have an agenda. You don't have anger, you don't have jadedness, and that's what makes it a good film.
Yeah.
There's not one-sided angerness towards you. Like you're saying the anti-Mike Moore films,
it's
like there's
obviously it's not an attack on anybody at all.
Nobody wants to see an attack on somebody, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, that's what makes a great documentary film. Mm-hmm. So everybody go see Working Class Rockstar, April 27th, 2 p.m., Wildside Matinee Film Festival, National Film Board, Toronto, Ontario. This is going to be a film that you're going to see at different TV stations around the world later on.
And also, if I can throw this out here, we have a big Toronto premiere coming up on June 9th that we're running with Kinertia Entertainment. It's going to be at 7 p.m. at the Blur Cinema.
Yeah.
And it's tied in with a show at the Annex Rec Room right afterwards with bands from the film itself actually playing. Including Polka Dot Cadaver, who used to be Dog Fashion Disco, and people will travel from the States to come and see, and Bloodshot Eye. And
is he formerly Polka Dot Door?
No, they were called Hug the Retard at one point. Absolutely,
Hug the Retard,
true.
Fantastic.
Absolutely, entirely
I would
true.
Go see Hug the Retard.
They're really good, though. They're like very Frank Zappa-ish. But anyway.
Cool. Yeah. I just think this is an opportunity. So for anyone listening who's interested in the film, this will be your chance to see it. Mm-hmm. You know, meet the director.
Yeah.
Give him some feedback before this.
Yeah, before the large I don't want to say larger, but but before the our planned premiere. I mean, the Wild Sound Festival, I think, is a really great thing. I mean, I really like the idea, and I'm glad I'm on it.
Cool. All right. So before we go, we always ask everybody the seven questions. Are you ready for the seven questions?
Sure.
What's your all-time favorite film?
I don't really have a favorite, but films that were most influential to me, probably Eraserhead from 1977, and In the Mouth of Madness, for some reason, has this strange place in my heart.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Who was your hero growing up?
My hero growing up, that's a really tough one. I don't know. I don't really have a. I didn't really have a hero.
Somebody. You had to look up to somebody.
Yeah. It would have been a filmmaker. I don't know. I'll say Quentin Tarantino, even though I wouldn't say that now.
God. That's what I mean.
Exactly.
That's like you have an idealized version of people. That's
exactly.
What it's about, right? Who is your, what artist would you love to work with?
What artist? there's so many. Like actor or anybody?
What artist? Any musician? Anybody? What person?
I absolutely really, really enjoy Corey McCabe, who made this really great indie film called The American Astronaut that absolutely has to be sought out. It's basically black and white musical Eraserhead in space.
Okay.
Cool. It's really good.
What's your all-time favorite? What's your favorite food?
My favorite food would have to be the burger and fries route at the best burger joint you could possibly find.
Which one? Is that?
Toss up between the Purple Onion and probably Bronto Burger.
Okay. Thanks for the tips.
Yeah.
Where's the that's a great name. What's the onion? Bronto.
The Purple Onion.
Yeah. Where's that?
It's in the junction right next to Vesuvio's. It's around Pacific and Dundas.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your passion besides your chosen career path?
Music is a big one, but I'm very much like a filmmaker type guy. Okay.
What's the most important sense of the five senses?
I think probably the sense of hearing.
I knew you're talking between sight and hearing, and you had to figure it out.
It's
right?
going to have to be hearing.
Okay.
I mean, taste is good too,
depends
on what you're tasting.
Give advice to the people in the world.
Advice to the people in the world: whatever it is that you choose to do with your life, do it with the absolute conviction and just go for it 100%, or you're not going to go where you want to go.
Before we leave you, you have to end with a joke.
I have to end with a joke. Clean or dirty?
We're on internet radio.
Oh, really? Okay. Here's a really bad one. What's the opposite of Christopher Reeve?
What?
Christopher Walken.
On that note, let's direct your question. It's very like grade five-ish, but
it is. I wouldn't call it dirty, just offensive, especially now that he's dead. And
That was Justin O'Connell, director of Working Class Rockstar, that's playing the Wild Sound Matinee Film Festival April 27th. He'll be there 2 p.m. Check it out. There'll be a feedback session going on afterwards. So be a part of that. It's like the audience. You're the main character of the night, and you're going to be watching a great film. Justin, thank you very much. We'll be back in 2 minutes playing.